Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us for today's Healthline. I'm Courtney Butts, and Healthline is where we like to focus on ways to live a healthier, happier, and pain-free life. We'll be taking your calls and answering your questions live in the studio today. We'll be opening the phone line soon, but as a reminder, please make sure you are in a quiet room when you call with your TV turned all the way down so that we can hear your question. Our number is 318-219-4569. We'll have that on the screen, so if you forget it, don't worry. Today's topic is all about sleep apnea because March is Sleep Apnea Awareness Month, and joining me today to talk about this topic is Dr. G.E. Gawley from Willis Knighton Institute of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a mouthful.
Oh, it sure is.
Yes, it is. Like you said, March is Sleep Awareness and Sleep Apnea Awareness Month in the U.S. A condition that, basically a chronic condition where the upper airway completely collapses. And it does this in a repetitive fashion throughout a majority of a particular individual's sleep. Mm-hmm. And as a result, when that airway collapses, their oxygen saturation may go down, and their brain, their lungs and their brain may get deprived of oxygen. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, it's a real problem.
Right, yeah, and you mentioned a chronic condition. So right. This happens right. Over time.
It happens over time, and it tends to get worse over time if there's not some intervention.
Gotcha, yeah. Right. So how does this disease or condition impact someone's sleep?
Yeah, it's a good question. So it impacts their sleep differently for different folks, but pretty much if you have a patient that snores a lot, not all patients that snore have sleep apnea, but mm-hmm. all patients that have sleep apnea do snore. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things. And how it affects the sleep is it tends to intermittently and chronically interrupt their sleep patterns. And of course, as you know, sleep is very critical to overall health, not right. just from being tired versus not being tired, but hormonal levels and your circadian rhythms and the mm-hmm. way that the hormones are secreted are all affected by your sleep patterns. So it's very, very critical that people get adequate sleep. Mm-hmm. And sleep apnea interrupts that sleep pattern. And as you can imagine, and maybe we'll talk about it later when we get some calls in, but you can imagine being a truck driver with sleep apnea.
Oh, yeah.
And driving down the highway and falling asleep. Mm. It's a huge problem.
Right. Well, so you mentioned snoring can be like a symptom of
right,
sleep apnea.
Right.
Are there any other warning signs that people need to look out for?
Sure. I would say the biggest warning sign is what they call excessive daytime sleepiness or excessive daytime somnolence, where you are tired during the day and fall asleep. Now, certainly, there's a whole host of other sleep conditions like narcolepsy and things like that can be included in the differential diagnosis. But for the most part, when you shouldn't be tired, you're tired. And some of these folks, for example, are tired early in the morning after they've slept. And so excessive daytime somnolence is usually a pretty big sign of that. But other things that we don't think of all the time, like depression, like type 2 diabetes, like cardiovascular disease or cardiopulmonary disease, the likelihood, and we'll talk about ways to diagnose sleep apnea, but typically, anyone that has an apnea-hypopnea index over 20 is considered significant. And in that category, a significant portion of those patients are going to die early mm-hmm. from early cardiopulmonary disease. And when I say early, I mean in their 40s or 50s,
wow.
not in their 80s or 90s. Mm-hmm. So it has a huge impact on overall health, tremendous impact on overall health.
Yeah. So sleep apnea, is this something that people live with and may not realize that they live with it?
Yeah, too. I mean, it's one thing if you're married or you have a sleep partner and they tell you, my God, you're snoring, and you look like you stop breathing and everything, and at night make you aware of it. But you may be living alone, and you may fall asleep and not even realize that you've got this loud snoring, or that you're intermittently quit breathing and things like that. So we say that up to 20% of the U.S. population has some degree of sleep apnea. It may be higher than that. It really may be higher than that.
Right. And you mentioned something important. So most people, like you said earlier, snore, but sleep apnea, it doesn't mean it's sleep apnea, but with sleep apnea, you snore and then you stop breathing
for
a second?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. Like I said before, everyone that has sleep apnea does snore to a certain extent. But not everybody that snores has sleep apnea. So some people just may have a long uvula, a long soft palate, a deviated septum, or whatever reasons, and they're snoring. If they've got excessive daytime sleepiness, then we would recommend that they get a sleep study done. And there's a lot of centers around Shreveport-Bossier, North Louisiana, that will do a good sleep study and then give you a report and tell you whether it's no sleep apnea or mild sleep apnea or moderate or severe. But again, not everybody that snores has sleep apnea. And then once you're able to distinguish, do you truly have sleep apnea, then you can investigate various potential treatments.
Right, okay. Well, if you were just tuning in and you wanted to give us a call, we have Dr. Golly here from Willis-Knighton Institute, and we're talking all about sleep apnea. It's Sleep Apnea Awareness Month. So give us a call at 318-219-4569. The number is right there on your screen. And I'm going to continue asking some questions of my own for you. So
sure.
We're talking about sleep studies. And is this a way that someone is diagnosed with sleep apnea, or is this, your common method of diagnosing?
Yeah, there's several different methods to diagnose, Courtney. But the gold standard method is what they refer to as a polysomnogram or sleep study. The lay term is just a sleep study. And the sleep study is fairly sensitive. It measures almost a dozen different parameters. Including your EKG, including the movement of your eyes, the movement of your legs, your oxygen saturation. There's a whole host of things that it measures, as well as the number of apneas where you completely stop breathing, or hypopneas, which are episodes where you have shallowed breathing. Mm-hmm. And then simultaneously it measures your pulse oximeter and things like that. There may be other fancier components to it, like measuring esophageal pressures and things like that, to help distinguish between peripheral sleep apnea, which is what we're talking about, obstructive sleep apnea, and sleep apnea that could be centrally mediated, meaning sleep apnea that is associated with some type of problem within the brainstem or within the medulla, in the areas that are important in initiating, where our brain says, okay, it's time to take a breath. So, but the gold standard, to answer your question, the gold standard is a sleep study. Now, there are home sleep studies, and there are those that you actually go to a sleep lab. Historically, the ones where you go to a sleep lab are more accurate than the home sleep studies. But again, there have been some improvements over the last few years in the home type of sleep studies as well.
Awesome. That's great information. Well, we have Fern on the line. Fern, what is your question for Dr. Golly today?
Now, I have severe sleep apnea, just been diagnosed with it. But I'm also a type 2 diabetic, and I've just been recently fitted with the CPAP the first of the year. Well, since then, my blood sugar during the night is dropping drastically low, like in 60s or 50s, and I just happen to wake up with either a foot cramp, or I do have, I'm on 2% oxygen at night only, too, due to that hooked into my CPAP machine. Can this sleep apnea be affecting that blood sugar to drop like that?
Yeah, it could be. Your name is Fern, is that right, Fern?
Yes, sir.
Well, Fern, yeah, it could certainly do. As I mentioned earlier, undiagnosed or untreated sleep apnea is also associated with an increase in type 2 diabetes, or non-insulin dependent diabetes, or adult onset diabetes. And it has to do with the effects of the hormonal levels during sleep. So I would say in your case, certainly talk to your doctor about it, your own personal physician. But it could be that since you've been on the CPAP machine, right, it could be treating your sleep apnea to a point where you may no longer need your oral medications. Because if you're taking your oral medications and you're using the CPAP, it could be that you're bottoming out a little bit on your glucose levels, blood glucose level.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I did stop it because he had had me on an antibiotic for an infection prior to that, and it kept it from being as intense as it should be. So he did pull me off the metformin. So it's still happening, being pulled off the metformin, but I didn't know if it was related, because it seemed like it's more severe now than it was when I got on the CPAP machine and all.
Right, but your blood sugar is dropping. It's not going up, it's dropping, correct?
It's dropping.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So
you may need to cut the dose of your metformin. But again, you need to go talk to your physician about that and make sure that he's in agreement.
Yes, sir. I didn't know if it could be connected. When I saw that on there, I thought, well, I'm going to call and ask.
Definitely.
I do have an appointment next.
Yeah, we mentioned that earlier, and it definitely could be connected.
All right. Well, thank you, Fern, for your question.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, if you had a question for Dr. Gulley and you're just joining us, please give us a call at 318-219-4569. Well, since we were talking about CPAPs and, you know, that's a treatment option for sleep apnea.
Yeah.
You want to tell me a little bit?
I bet you want to know about treatment options. Well, you know, it's interesting. through the evolution of sleep apnea, there's been a lot of treatment options. Just like the polysomnogram or the sleep study is considered to be the gold standard test to diagnose sleep apnea, sort of the gold standard treatment for sleep apnea for the past 30 or 40 years has been the use of CPAP. Mm-hmm. That's continuous positive airway pressure. So sometimes it's a mask that goes over your mouth and nose. Sometimes it's just a mask that goes over your nose. Probably the more common one nowadays, Courtney, is one that just fits over your nose. And what it does is, because your airway, as I mentioned, it's a chronic process where the airway collapses, so your throat actually closes off. Mm. It could close off up high, it could close off behind your tongue, it could close off below your tongue. But it closes off. So what the airway pressure does is it kind of blows it up like a balloon. It kind of acts like a pneumatic stent. Mm-hmm. So a certain amount of pressure is continuously applied through the nose. It goes in through the nose, into your back of your throat, and it kind of stents open like a balloon. Kind of stents open the back of your throat. So it can't collapse. It is cool. Now, that's considered the gold standard treatment for obstructive sleep apnea, particularly the gold standard non-surgical treatment. Now, the biggest problem with CPAP is compliance. You know, the patients a lot of patients don't like to wear it. Like a lot of things, they get used to it, they almost can't live without it. Yes, mm-hmm. I like it, yes, it's not a problem. But for some people, they just can't stand something around. They're claustrophobic, mm-hmm. or for whatever reason, they don't feel like they can sleep in a certain way when that mask is on. So the biggest issue is compliance. Mm-hmm. There's other modalities to treat sleep apnea as well, non-surgical, and the non-surgical, probably one of the more common ones is, well, lose weight, you know, because a lot of the patients, not all patients, you know, some of them are of normal weight and they still have sleep apnea because there's a structural abnormality, mm-hmm. in the throat or the mouth, or their jaw is real small or something like that. Those we can actually help with surgery. But there may be some folks that are particularly overweight and the typical Pickwickian type of look, and those patients do very, very well on a weight loss, but again, it's hard to lose weight, you know. Right. It requires quite an effort.
And if you're not sleeping, then that can just really impact your weight loss journey as well.
And that'll compound it as well. Absolutely right. So there's a lot of other modalities. Back in the olden days, you know, they used to tie, kind of sew a tennis ball into the back of their sleep shirt. you know, back, that's mm-hmm. back when they wore these pajamas or sleep shirts, mm-hmm. and they would sew a tennis ball because, you know, you may have a question about the position. It's always kind of better with sleep apnea to sleep on your side or on your belly than it is on your back. Because mm-hmm. on your back, your airway kind of collapses, or your tongue falls back and collapses more. So to help encourage patients to sleep on their side or on their belly, they would sew a tennis ball to the back of their pajama top, and so that every time they would go to lay on their back, it was uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable.
Even though you were asleep, you would kind of roll over on your side, and that would help the sleep apnea.
Gotcha. Well, are you recommending people to do that nowadays?
No, I'm not. I'm recommending all of the non-surgical options, and then we have a few surgical options
okay.
as well.
That's a cool story, though. So yeah, I can imagine, you know, having something on your face and then not getting comfortable. Is there any, with the advancements with sleep apnea, and you said it's smaller, it goes around just your nose instead of over your whole face,
right.
So has that improved outcomes, you think?
I think it has, you know, but as you can imagine, to have a good seal around your nose, part of it is you need some, you know, structure on your lip. And then some of the older folks that may not have teeth, or they may have dentures and things like that, it doesn't seal as well. So it's not, for those that can tolerate CPAP and that it works well for them, then it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some tolerance issues.
It's very individualized, it sounds
like. Yes, ma'am.
Like. Depends on the patient. And what about the surgeries that you do?
Yeah, there are some surgeries available to treat obstructive sleep apnea, and a lot of it depends on what's going on. You know, the big issue is anything that reduces or anything that increases the resistance to flow of air in and out of the mouth or in or out of the nose can contribute to obstructive sleep apnea. So we say, well, what are you talking about, man? Well, mm-hmm. things like a deviated septum. If you have a really severely deviated septum, or the little turbinates, which are the bones inside your nose, if they're really big, and you have allergies and things like that, that can block the air from going in. So things like straightening out their septum or out fracturing their turbinates are possible treatment options. Folks that have a really long soft palate and snore severely, sometimes that soft palate, when they fall asleep, can relax and block the airway. Mm. Reducing the length of that soft palate can help not only with the snoring but with the sleep apnea issues. And then we also measure an area in the back of the throat called the posterior airway space. And that posterior airway space can be blocked by individuals that have a large tongue or that may have a very small jaw. So in those cases, a surgical option is actually to lengthen your jaw, kind of a
wow.
jaw advancement procedure. And that has a very, very high success rate in select patients in eliminating the need for CPAP and eliminating mm-hmm. sleep apnea. So there are surgical options.
Gotcha. And the surgical options are typically for individuals that maybe have abnormalities?
Correct. They may have abnormalities of their bite, mm-hmm. of the way that their bite or their occlusion is, or they just may have a skeletal deformity, mm-hmm. A really small jaw, or they're abnormalities that are noted not just on sleep study but on cone beam scanning that we can do to measure the certain lengths of the posterior airway space, their hyoid bone. That's another area. If you have a very low hyoid bone, it's a little bone, not very many people know about it. It's a little bone right here in your throat, and we can measure the distance from your lower jaw to that hyoid bone. And if that hyoid bone is low, we may recommend suspending that hyoid bone as a treatment as well. So there's various treatments that are available.
Yeah, yeah. So if you have a question for Dr. Ghali and you're just now joining us, give us a call at 318-219-4569. We've got him in the studio today and we're answering your, oh, we've got a caller right now. Dave, mm-hmm. what is your question?
Good afternoon. A question is kind of related in that it affects my sleep. Do you know of a physician that can repair, or you'd recommend a Zinker diverticulitis?
Oh, Zinker's diverticulum. Yeah. Yes, that's a very treatable condition. We treat that there at our place at Willis-Knighton as well. And so you've been diagnosed with a Zinker's?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So a Zenker's diverticulum is basically where a portion of the cervical esophagus has an outpouching, has an outpouching outside. So this is, imagine you have your esophagus, and then there's a piece of it that kind of pouches out like that. And typically, are you having any symptoms like coughing up food particles and things like that?
Yes.
So typically, there are several ways to treat that, but usually that's sort of unrelated to sleep apnea. But are you having sleep apnea issues with it as well?
Well, I'm awakened due to coughing, awake in the middle of the night, and not sleeping well due to coughing because particles or phlegm gets caught up in there.
So you see, Courtney, here's a situation where he's having difficulty sleeping because he's coughing up stuff at night. So what happens is as they swallow, some of the food, instead of everything going down the esophagus, some food particles get stuck in this little pouch. And then as they relax, this food then kind of falls out of the pouch, and then they cough. And so it's very, very treatable, sir. Very, very treatable condition. There's a couple of different modalities that could be treated. Sometimes we'll go in and excise that little pouch. Sometimes we will actually take that pouch and do a PEXI procedure where we just, instead of letting it sit like this where it can collect stuff, we tie it up high so that it doesn't have an opportunity to fill up as well. So it sort of depends on your overall health and what conditions you have, but certainly we should evaluate that.
And so you do this, you treat
sir.
Or do this surgery?
Yes, sir, we do.
Okay.
We do.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Dave, for your question. Yeah, and if you had a question for Dr. Ghali, we're talking about sleep apnea and Sleep Apnea Awareness Month. So if you had a question for Dr. Ghali, please give us a call at 318-219-4569. We'll have the phone lines open for just a couple more minutes. At Willis-Knighton, do you guys do sleep studies or?
They do, do sleep studies. And there's also several centers around the community that do it on an outpatient basis as well. Most of the time, we have to get an insurance pre-authorization in order to do that. And actually, some of the surgeries that we do, the insurance company also requires, depending on their insurance, requires that they've had a previous sleep study to kind of document the sleep apnea.
So you
really need a minimum of 4 hours of sleep in this. And I guess the biggest...
With the sleep study?
With the sleep study. I guess the biggest downside is, some folks don't like to sleep in like a little... Even though they make it comfortable and it looks like a bedroom and everything, it's not their bedroom, it's not their bed. So that's why some people advocate the home sleep things. Mm-hmm. But then the home sleep things, usually, unless you've got a technician that comes out to your home and sets it up, usually it's dependent on you doing it, and may be some error and variability in that. With your background as a dietitian, you can imagine the importance of a good diet and maintaining proper weight related to sleep apnea. You see a lot of patients now that are on some of these weight loss medications that are losing weight that have had significant sleep apnea. I'm finding that some of their incidence of sleep apnea is going down quite significantly. So not only are they improving in their diabetes and hypertension and things like that, cholesterol level, but also their levels of sleep apnea are almost eliminated as well. So there's a lot of positivity with it.
Very, very positive things can happen when you change your lifestyle for the better, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have Chris on the line. What is your question?
Hi. I was wondering, do we need a doctor's referral? I mean, from a regular doctor to have the sleep study done?
Do you need a referral? Yes. Usually you will need a referral. Some of the sleep centers have their own in-house sleep doctors. Most of the sleep doctors are usually going to be pulmonary medicine doctors or neurologists. Those are the two, or they could be primary care doctors as well. But those are the three biggest categories. But typically, yes, you need a referral to get that. And typically, it's got to be pre-authorized with your insurance as well. So, yeah. probably your best source is to get your primary care doctor to refer you. Most of the patients that come to me, Chris, are patients that already have a sleep study. I mean, they've been referred to me for a second second opinion or something like that. And most of the time, they've already had a sleep study done. But I still send people for sleep studies. And most of them have been done already, and they're coming for a second opinion, or they want to talk about surgery because they can't tolerate their CPAP and things like that. But I will rarely do surgery on someone that hasn't already been on CPAP because, you know, we need to try conservative therapies first before we just jump in and do an operation on somebody.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Chris, for your question. And so we talked about, you know, lifestyle modifications. So is sleep apnea something that you can reverse, or, you know, you're diagnosed with it, can you potentially reverse it?
Yeah, it is reversible, and certainly we can reverse it surgically. The using CPAP really doesn't necessarily reverse it. Mm-hmm. It reverses it while you're using the CPAP. Mm-hmm. The idea is during the day, you know, when you're not asleep and you're not laying down on your back, you're able to maintain your airway intact. What's happening with these folks with sleep apnea is when they lay on their back and they fall asleep, the normal tone or opening to their airway kind of collapses. And then their diaphragm is moving against this negative pressure, and it causes significant problems. And so,
Right. Yeah. Well, I think we have another caller
sure.
on the line. Charlotte, what is your question?
Yes, my question is, I had a fall almost a year ago on my face and fractured my nose, and it doesn't show from the outside, but it's knocked it. My septum to one side, and I was sent to, I believe it's Dr. Golly's group because it was at Wills Knighton South, but I'm almost 86 and I don't want to be put to sleep for surgery. But then the doctor that I went to, I can't think of his name right now, he told me that there was a 30 minute, you know, one that was shorter, that he thought he could fix my nose, and I told him I thought I would wait and see if I could just live with it. And I thought I was doing okay, except I always sound like I have a cold. And but lately I have been, and of course it may be my age, I'm not sick or anything, but I have just been so tired, and I do get plenty of sleep. So I've just had this tired feeling and sleepy feeling, but I'm not sick or anything like that. So when he was talking, I was watching this, and I wondered if that could be one of my problems, is my septum, because I actually have to pry my nose open. I use nose spray, and I'm going to a pulmonary doctor.
Okay.
And
Charlotte, I'm so sorry. We only have about 2 minutes left. Did you get any of that?
No, I think, Charlotte, it could very well be the problem that you have a deviated septum, because, as I mentioned before, anything that increases the resistance to flow into your nose or makes it difficult for air to get in and out, like a deviated septum, can contribute to obstructive sleep apnea. So I think it's worth getting checked out.
Absolutely. Always worth a second opinion.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you, Charlotte, for your question. We appreciate it. Okay, so with sleep apnea, you know, this is a very common condition, and we talked about there are ways that you kind of can reverse it with lifestyle and everything, but what happens if it goes untreated?
Yeah. Well, if it goes untreated, Courtney, the biggest issue is early death, mm-hmm. and putting such a strain on the cardiovascular system.
Right.
That you know, you end up with hypertension, you end up with stroke, you end up with congestive heart failure earlier, and I don't mean mm-hmm. earlier by days, I mean earlier by decades.
Right.
So it's something that really needs to be treated. We see it in children too.
Right.
So
wow. Well, Dr. Golly with Willis Knighton Institute of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery.
Thanks for having me.
Definitely get it checked out by a professional if you are worried that you have sleep apnea. And that's, fortunately, all the time that we have today. Dr. Golly, again, thank you for your time, and we hope that you have a very happy and healthy day.